Thank you, Rachel, for leading us so well this morning. I wasn't given a topic, so I had a look in the lectionary for what was the reading or suggested readings for today. Can you believe it's only 2 weeks since Easter? 2 weeks today was Easter Day. And yet, I don't know about you, but it seems ages ago. Does anybody else feel like that? It seems ages and ages to me since Easter. Anyway, got a question for you. Has your life ever taken an unexpected or unwelcome turn, causing you to ask, what happens next? We've all been in those situations, haven't we? We've been going along ever so nicely. Something happens and we don't know where to turn. So our next question is, what happens next? The disciples had left everything that was familiar to them when Jesus called them to follow him. They'd given up their jobs, they'd left their families and their homes. And for 3 years, they followed Jesus. They saw him do miracles. He healed the sick. He fed big crowds. He taught in parables. And the disciples spent time with him, watching all these things and learning from him. Then they experienced the joy of what we call Palm Sunday, as Jesus rode into Jerusalem and all the crowds welcomed him, singing and dancing, waving palm branches and welcoming him with open arms. Later that week, they witnessed the horror of the arrest and the trial and the crucifixion of this man that they'd followed for 3 years. And 3 days later, they experienced the wonder and the joy of the resurrection. What a mixture of emotions they must have gone through. But then they realise that they're not safe at the moment. They're scared and they keep themselves locked away for fear of the Jewish authorities. And in John chapter 20, we read that Jesus appears to them as they are locked behind closed doors. And he breathed on them saying, "Receive the Holy Spirit. And my peace I give to you," he said. He was preparing them then for the next stage of the work that they were to do. In today's reading, as Bill pointed out, we find seven of them by the Sea of Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee as we know it. And they were probably wondering what to do next. Jesus had said he would meet them in Galilee. Whether they believed that or not, I have no idea. But seven of them were certainly there. It says it was Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that was James and John, and two other disciples. And they were in Galilee. They were probably looking for some degree of normality after everything that happened. Something that was familiar. Something that they could relate to. And I think that's something that we all do in times when life is difficult. Things have changed beyond what we're used to. And we look for some degree of normality. Peter then says, "It's always Peter, isn't it? I love Peter. I really do love Peter. Impetuous Peter, I think we could call him." Peter says, "I'm going fishing." He'd been a fisherman before he was called by Jesus. It's something he knew how to do, something that he felt safe doing because he knew how to do it. But maybe he was looking for a chance to think about all that had happened. Fishermen don't like a lot of noise. When we go on holiday, we like to watch the fishermen, not the fishermen in the boats, but the ones that do this, you know? And they don't like it if you make a noise. If you go past a fisherman with a fishing rod, you have to be quiet because you scare the fish if you make a noise. So it would be quiet out on the lake. So he wanted a chance, possibly, to think about everything that had happened. Everything that he'd seen. Everything that he'd been part of, including the crucifixion. And he would have had time to think about the fact that he denied even knowing Jesus. Perhaps he needed to come to terms with the fact that he'd denied knowing Jesus. And he needed to face his guilt. How many of us, when challenged, have either said nothing about our faith or have waved it off because we didn't want to speak openly about Jesus? We didn't want to admit that Jesus is a part of our life. Sometimes it's easier to do that. And Peter was frightened when he stood by that fire and was challenged about him being a follower of Jesus. He denied 3 times, as Jesus predicted he would. He denied 3 times that he knew Jesus. And he would be remembering that and feeling so guilty that the man that he'd followed and he'd loved for 3 years, he'd let him down. So perhaps he was looking for some answers to some of these questions. This fits in with Bill, you know. There are questions we don't have an answer to. There are some questions there is no answer to. But perhaps Peter thought about some of these things. What have I done? Might it have been different had I admitted that I knew Jesus? What have these 3 years been all about? Have I wasted my time following Jesus? Did I really learn anything? Next question. Who was Jesus? Was he who I thought he was? Why did I follow him? Then a big question, something we could all ask ourselves. Who am I? Who am I? And the last question for this morning. What will I do now? What does my future hold now? The Lord I have followed for 3 years has gone. What am I going to do now? So after a night on the lake with these thoughts and having plenty of time to think because they caught no fish, there was nothing to pull into the boat, they begin to return to the land. And the story tells us that someone is standing on the shore. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Because we know that someone was Jesus. But when you're 100 yards away, it isn't always easy to tell who it is that's there. I met someone in the street some months ago who clearly knew me. She was on the other side of the road. How wide's the road, Ron? How wide's our road? About 4 metres. And then books, she's that in old money. Oh, well, our road isn't ever so wide. And this lady spoke to me. I could see it was a lady by her shape, but I couldn't see her face. My eyesight isn't super good, you see, and I hadn't got my new glasses by this time. And I had no idea who this lady was until she told me her name. So she was only 18 feet away from me, which isn't very far. So just imagine how I would get on looking at somebody 100 yards away. I wouldn't have a chance really, would I? So it's hardly surprising that they didn't know who was talking to them. And this voice says to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" And it's obvious they haven't got any fish. And I can't imagine how they felt, but they said, "No." And then this voice says to them in verse 6, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." The question that Jesus asked them, "Haven't you got any fish?" was not really meant as a report on their night's work. He knew they hadn't got anything. And he also knew how empty the lives of Peter and the other disciples were since the happenings of Good Friday. Not only was their net empty, their lives were empty too. And Peter, we'll go back to Peter again, Peter is living with the pain of the past on Good Friday. And he's fishing, if you like, on the Good Friday side of the boat. The net is empty. His life is empty. There are no fish. There are no answers. There is no way forward. And even after a long night of fishing, there is nothing to nourish or sustain their lives either. They can't even have a meal. They have nothing. After they threw their net onto the right, on the right side of the boat, it was filled with fish. And I know certainly one child has got almost dead on the answer. There were 153 fish. And I know one child has got that the answer almost exactly right. Good guess, I expect. I don't know I couldn't find out whether there was any significance to the 153. David probably knows, I don't. But the commentary I read said 153 would be seen as a lot. So it's just indicative of the fact that there was a lot. I don't think a lot will count for the bar of chocolate, mind you. They caught a lot of fish. So many that it was impossible for them to get it into the boat. And it was then that the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." He might have had to shout, but I'd like to think that he whispered it in his ear so that Peter heard it definitely. "It's the Lord," said the disciple of Peter, who Jesus loved. And hearing that, Peter puts his clothes on because he'd taken them all off. I think they get in the way when you're fishing. I don't know. Never been a fisherman. Put his clothes on and rushed into the water, wanting to get to Jesus as soon as he possibly could. The love was still there. He wanted to get to Jesus. He wanted to talk to him. And then once the boat has landed, we see this touching scene of Jesus and his disciples enjoying a breakfast of bread and fish together. I once heard it described in this place as the barbecue on the beach. A lovely picture. But as Jesus invited them to come for breakfast, he also invited them to bring some of their catch with them. He wanted them to bring what they'd got, or some of what they'd got with them. In this act of eating breakfast with his disciples, Jesus showed them an additional sign that he had really risen from the dead. He really was alive as they knew him. Ghosts don't eat fish. He had breakfast with them. They ate together and celebrated that Jesus was alive. He proved to them again, for the third time, that he was alive. Jesus wanted to remove any disillusionment from their minds, any confusion that they might have had as to what had really happened, and to prepare them for resuming their ministry. Shortly after this, Jesus moves on to his confrontation with Peter, asking Peter three times, "Do you love me?" A significant number for Peter. Jesus had told him that on Good Friday, three times, "You will deny me." And on this day, three times, Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter confirmed, "Yes, I do love you. You know that I love you." Peter declared his love for Jesus and receives his forgiveness and his confirmation of his future role, that he would feed Jesus' lambs, feed his sheep, look after them. He would be the rock on which Jesus would build his church. The risen Jesus has renewing power with a new and more powerful mandate for his followers. Jesus has a job for us to do. And we here as a church have a job to do. We've been through a long night of fishing without a catch. 3 years without a minister, two of those years closed because of COVID. We haven't caught very much, if anything, in that time for Jesus. Not because we haven't tried, but God has new plans for us. Now, right now, is the time for us to cast our net to the right side of the boat. We need to think, as they say, outside the box or outside the boat. We need to cast our nets in a new direction. And if we go forward in faith and we believe that this is what we are to do, we will catch fish for Jesus and bring them to him. Jesus encouraged his disciples to bring some of their fish to breakfast. Jesus is encouraging us to bring people here to church, to meet with him, to join together in this family. Jesus wants us to fish for him in new ways, ways which might be very strange to us, ways which we will probably want to resist. But if we are obedient, God will extend his kingdom here. He will honour our work. The disciples were obedient to the voice that told them to recast their net on the right side of the boat. Are we prepared to try new ways of attracting people to Jesus? Casting our nets in untried directions? We may feel unable or unequal to the task, but Jesus will lead us to the fishing grounds, and he will fill our nets if we are obedient and trust him. Will you trust him? Can we go fishing together? Have we got nets that are big enough and strong enough for the catch that God has prepared for us out there? I'm willing to try. Are you?